Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. It's Hockey Central. Glad to be with you today alongside Anthony Stewart and our man Justin Bourne. Hockey's been real good. Two series tied up at twos. We have more of it today. The series are going long. It's an awesome day. And you know what, guys? I think that over the course of the majority of this radio broadcast, we'll talk about two things. Do you want to guess what those two things are? Stewie, do you have a swing at this pinata? What are the two things we're going to talk about today?
The sword in Marc-Andre Fleury's back and officiating.
Okay, you got one of the two. Justin, he got one of the two, and that's officiating. We will talk about officiating for sure. Not sure about the sword thing with Marc-Andre Fleury, although Robin Leonard's name may come up. What's the other thing do you think we should talk plenty about today?
Boy, well, I figured goaltending would be at the top of the list today, Jeff.
You're warm. Let's get you there. Get the ball over the line.
In general,
Robin Leonard.
No, hang on. Borny was on to something with goaltending.
Is it going to be just Fleury and Leonard or
No. Cold.
Carey Price.
The Ryan Pulock save.
Very good. Also, Jeff, I'll add to that. I believe it's Indigenous People Day today. Are we having
Yes.
What's the official title?
Brigitte Lacouette. Well, yeah, it is Indigenous Peoples Day today. Reggie Leach was on the morning show. I want to play some of that a little bit later on. Brigitte Lacouette will be joining us here at the bottom of the hour. Hard-hitting defenseman on the national in the national program will be dropping by, and we're very much looking forward to catching up with her. She was really good in that Secret Dream Gap Tour Calgary tournament. So we'll talk to her about that and what Indigenous Peoples Day means to her. And get a sort of time and temp on her career, like real impressive defenseman. In the meantime, to the games that we saw this weekend, to the meantime, the headline around the NHL today, and yes, Borny, we will get to the Islanders, we will get to Ryan Pulock, we will get to that outstanding game on Saturday. Boy, was that a lot of fun. But the headline coming out of the weekend is still officiating, specifically in games 3 and 4 between Montreal and Vegas. And first of all, the series kind of seems like a weird one to me in that every team that was supposed to have won based on gameplay has lost. It's almost as if hockey is this random sequence of events that must make it increasingly more frustrating to be a gambler if you're choosing to put money on hockey games based on precedent. But to start off on the officiating, Stewie, let's get your thoughts on what we've seen and how you would even begin to sort of sort out or have comment on what we saw in 3 and 4 between Chris Lee and Dan O'Rourke, the two officials for this one.
Well, I'll preface this by saying I don't really have a horse in the race with the playoffs here. But I don't mind it. I don't mind it. And I took the heat on Twitter last night when I tweeted it, and I was Hot Take Tuesday guy saying, you know, when you're playing for this, you know, the toughest trophy in sports, you do not want the refs to be officiating. Yeah, did they turn their eyes and look the other way on a couple of those plays? Yes, but I do not want, you know, Vegas or Montreal to win this series because, you know, they got 9 more power plays and 3 or 4 more power play goals. And unless it's really stopping a chance for a goal, like on the one that they called, you know, on Montreal, their first and only penalty, I don't mind the stuff in the corner. I don't mind the punches in the face. I don't mind the cross checks because that's how the game is played, and it's tough. And you look at Corey Perry's face. That was a missed call. Yeah, they should have called that one. That was high stick. But, you know, they're talking about the cross checks and the roughing stuff. I don't mind that at all. Let the kids play. Barney, what do you think?
Yeah, you know what, Stewie? I actually don't disagree. Like, you know, maybe I'm a little bit softer on my take than that because, like, I do like the idea that it's playoffs and fight through it and, you know, it's going – because there are so many more infractions that take place, like, it just would feel impossible for them to call absolutely everything. The one thing that I think we need to do away with, and this is – I'm, like, really digging in on this. I'm done with the idea that the first penalty call of the game should do anything to the rest of the penalty calls of the game. Everyone's saying it. You've heard Burke says it. You know, I've heard you mention it, Jeff. Ron McLean talked about it last night on their coverage. Like, there's no reason that the first penalty has to be held to a different standard than any other penalty. Call a penalty where you see it. If the first penalty ends up being a little ticky-tackier than maybe you'd like, well, you know, sorry, it got close to being a penalty. It's a penalty. I just call it as you see it.
Stewie, before I weigh in on any of this, I want to see you go back at that one.
I honestly, I just don't get the outrage. And people are tweeting about it last night saying there needs to be a whole referendum on officiating. But those two refs that were there, it's Chris Lee, right, and the other gentleman there.
Chris Lee
and
Dan
O'Rourke.
They're
there for a reason. They're there for a reason. And that's the one thing, too. And I'm sure throughout the game he had a conversation with the representatives, the captains, and saying, guys, we're going to let you play tonight, but don't embarrass us, right? Don't, you know, we're going to let a little extra go, but don't make a mockery of the game. Don't be slashing guys in the teeth. So I think as a player, I would rather it that way. I do not want to be on the power play or killing penalties. It just ruins the flow of the game. So I just don't get the outrage. I think it's a little bit of a faux outrage, but I was totally fine. And again, I saw everyone, you know, thinking the opposite. But again, I'm not afraid to voice my opinion. But I know you have a strong opinion on this, Jeff. I'd like to hear what you have to think. Absolutely. A couple
of things here. One, to the to what we saw in games 3 and 4, the danger that I see in the way it was handled is, and I've sort of equated this to, and it might be an exaggeration, but I've sort of equated it to the situation around the Boston Bruins and the Pittsburgh Penguins after Cook Savard. And everybody was, you know, send out the monster, give us Matt Cook. And there was that game at the Garden. And it ended up being a Matt Cook-Sean Thornton fight, and everything was done. But leading up to that, there were weeks of what many people considered to be blown calls and inconsistency amongst officials around the NHL, to the point where nobody really knew what a penalty was. And I remember talking to some people, and the point coming out of pretty much all the conversations was, we know something is going to happen to Matt Cook in this game against the Boston Bruins. We know it's not going to tickle. Like, this is going to be a take your medicine game for Matt Cook. We know something's going to happen. The scary thing is, you have two teams that are hot. Okay, in that situation, you have a fan base that's hot. Like, the temperature around that game, you guys remember this. I mean, there were wanted posters for Matt Cook up around the Garden, right? You guys remember this, right? I'm not making this up. Like, it was a really hot situation. And the scary thing about all of it is, like, normally hockey can sort that out. And hockey has sorted that out. The thing that made it different was nobody really had a handle on what the rules were. No one really knew. There was, like, some things would get called, other things wouldn't. Like, big things were getting missed. And there was a feeling that no one knows the calls, and that's why this is going to be dangerous. I think what we saw with Chris Lee and Dan O'Rourke, like, the Boston-Pittsburgh situation is an exaggeration, but I think this winks at that. You know, Mark Twain used to always say, history doesn't repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes. And I think this situation is rhyming with what we saw in Boston and Pittsburgh so many years ago over Matt Cook, in that after a couple of games, you know, after like seven periods of not seeing calls, or sorry, five periods of not seeing calls, we headed into the third period yesterday, I think, all saying the same thing. What's the rules? And what's a penalty?
There are no rules.
Well, that's what it felt like for a lot of people.
But
here's the thing, though, Stewie. The thing about it is, when you head into a period of hockey where nobody knows the rules and two sides are hot, and you still have the visual of Corey Perry's, you know, bloody face and his nose fresh in everyone's mind, you still have thoughts of Edmondson hammering Carrier in the back, into the boards. You still have the situation with Noshek and Shea Weber. And again, another hit from behind into the boards and cross checks and all that, and no calls. When nobody knows what a penalty is and nobody knows the rules, generally that's where players get really hurt. And I remember thinking to myself, we're going into a period now where no one knows what the rules are, and both teams are hot at each other. That's why I looked at that and said, that's a dangerous situation that the officials have brought on themselves. Like, I understand this too. Like, I understand the attraction of the Hudson Bay rules aspect of the game. I get it. Let them play, you know, like Thunderdome, let's go, last man standing, and I am king, curtain. I get all that. I understand that emotional appeal. I just think when no one knows the rules, guys can really get hurt. And it's entirely predictable when that happens. And you can't say, wow, that's unfortunate, because it was expected. That's how I looked at that scenario. But I do like an establishment penalty early to say, here's the line, because officials call every single game differently. And that's just human emotion. That's just everyone sees the game differently and sees infractions differently. You can't get around that. There is an inherited bias that we all have. And the best thing we can do is recognize it and not pretend that it doesn't exist. We all have that within us. Stuart, you see a call differently than I see a call, than Justin sees a call. We all see it differently. But I think what everyone appreciates in hockey, I would imagine I would too, is if I see a standard early, like this is the line, skate to this, but don't go past it, then I'm fine. Then I'm fine as a player. What do you think, Justin? Once he takes the mute button off, we'll get Justin's thoughts on it. There we go.
You're never going to be given that perfect penalty in the first 5 minutes to set the tone. Like the idea of waiting for this penalty that, you know, reaches a perfect threshold, like, it doesn't exist. So you kind of have to call what's there to let people know that, yeah, we're calling penalties tonight. And then I don't think that you have that problem. I agree that by the time you get to the last period last night and no one is sure what a penalty is, you have created a problem. But I believe you do that by seeking precedent that may not come and overlooking calls that you can make. And the only thing I'll say to the rest of your point there is just, I think that danger happens when there is an incident, a direct incident that the players feel that the refs messed up or missed, or now they have to do the officiating. They have to take justice into their own hands. This to me just seemed like more bad officiating or confusing officiating than blowing something where all of a sudden you say, okay, we need to take this into our own hands.
Yeah, but I think the refs do a pretty good job of setting the tone, and they understand what both groups bring to the table. I don't think the series has been out of hand physically where they need to actually put the, you know, start blowing the whistles. And as you get, you know, deeper into the playoffs and deeper closer towards the Stanley Cup, you do not want the games decided by officiating. I'd rather them call nothing,
but they will be
calling too much.
But that's still a decision, though. Like choosing not to call something is still a choice.
But they're right? choosing it. There was literally a punch in the face at the end of the second period, and he literally looked off and said, you know what? I'm tired of this. Let's just blow down the rest of the period in 3 seconds and come back and reset. So
either way, the officials are going to decide the game by either calling or not calling, and that's going to play into one team's hands more than the other. It's kind of like the idea about how rules make fights. Like, you see this whenever a boxer faces an MMA guy, and the question is not who will win, but whose rules are we playing with? And if you're playing with boxing's rules, well, generally the boxer is going to win. If you're playing by MMA rules, well, guess who's going to win there?
But they did set the standard. They set that standard, though, in the first 5-10 minutes of the game by not calling, missing 3 or 4. So they stuck to that standard. I'd rather that than...
They did stick to that standard.
Yep.
They did. I will give you that. They did stick to that standard. And now dominating the conversation is this, the officials. To the game itself that we saw last night... just me, or does it seem like every game that Montreal should have won, Vegas did, and every game that Vegas should have won, Montreal did? Am I on the mark or off the mark on this one, Justin Bourne?
Yeah, and I'll take that. I'll take heading into Game 5, where it feels like the series should be 2-2. You know, there's an unbelievable stat last night where going into overtime, high danger chances in the game were 18-0 for Montreal. Absolute dominance. So, like, Vegas didn't get a sniff. Not a sniff until they scored.
Just to pause on that, because everybody has a different definition. Let me know if I'm wrong on this. Everybody has a different definition of what a high danger chance is. But when it's tilted that much,
right?
you know, you sort of erase a few for margin of error. When it's that overwhelming, and listen, you don't need analytics to tell you, just watch the game. You can tell, like, Carey Price really wasn't tested. And even the McNabb goal, oof, woof, right? Like, that's not a Carey Price goal.
No, I'll totally agree with you on the analytics thing that, like, generally, because it's tough with margins of error and miscounts and subjectiveness, it's tough. Okay, you know, if it's close, it doesn't tell me a whole lot. When it's like that, you know, that's something I wouldn't have known it was that lopsided. But when I thought back to it, like, nope, I cannot remember Vegas with the puck in the slot, you know, inside the house, taking a shot till Waugh made that beautiful finish on Price.
Yeah, just watching Vegas play, it brought me back to a quote from, I think it was Dodgeball, where it said, "That's a bold strategy, Cotton," where Vegas, they literally just sat back and they were saying, you know what, we're just going to sit back and hopefully the Montreal Canadiens punch themselves out, which is kind of a bold strategy for, because they weren't really getting any high danger chances, like you mentioned. You know, they weren't really hitting. They got out hit 40-24. So they were just sort of trying to almost lull the Montreal Canadiens to sleep. I don't think that was by design. I think maybe they're just worn out from that Colorado series and there's just too many passengers on this Vegas team. They definitely lucked that one out because you leave it to chance, especially in the playoffs. There's no reason why Montreal could have been up 2-3 easily going into the third period. But again, they gambled on Leonard and he came in, did the job, had some big saves, and you know, now it's a best of three.
It's like the Ali Foreman fight where he just let Foreman punch himself out and then took him out with one right. We should park some time here and talk about Robin Leonard. And before we even talk about his performance, the decision itself, if you know anything about Peter DeBoer, and this goes back to his days with the Kitchener Rangers, he's not shy about making a bold move, regardless of where the series is at or where the season is at. This is Peter DeBoer. You know, this is part of why Vegas brought in Peter DeBoer. This is, like, say what you want about the relationship between Marc-Andre Fleury and the Vegas Golden Knights and how they tried to move him to the Pittsburgh Penguins in the offseason, but they couldn't find the right fit or the third team to make it happen, although a couple of the California teams were involved. Like, Peter DeBoer does this. Like, nobody should be surprised here, Justin, at the decision that was made. But even though Robin Leonard had a wonderful game last night, what did you make? Like, what was your initial reaction when you saw, sure, Fleury had a tough one on Friday, but you don't go back to him on Sunday? What did you think?
I loved it. I loved it before the game, too. And I know Stewie didn't as much, but I just, this team is built on the backs of success in the crease, which has been a goaltending tandem. They spend $12 million on their goaltenders to get good goaltending. You know, they have now Marc-Andre Fleury, a guy who, as much as everyone wants to forget a lot of this, because he's such a wonderful guy and we all love him so much, has had some moments in the postseason that have, I'd call the yips, where he doesn't have his A game and it just isn't working for him. We're now at two moments where just one almost cost his team a game and one did cost his team a game. And you've got Robin Leonard right there, who's been so good for so long. To me, you use the tandem. You use one of your team's strengths. Robin Leonard played 20 games this year and was like a .918 save percentage. Last 6 years, he's had unbelievable numbers. I don't understand how you want to turn this team into a team without a tandem anymore. A lot of players or fans didn't want to see Leonard go in. He's an unbelievable goaltender. Use your strength. Rest the old guy, Fleury. I say put Fleury back in next game.
Yeah, and again, I try to separate Fleury the person from Fleury the player, but the Fleury the player was a Conn Smythe. You know, he's the favorite for the Conn Smythe Trophy too. So I'm gonna go a different angle here and call it the miserable veteran effect. And I think they have to now win a cup in the next couple of years because it's gonna be tough for them to draw veteran guys to come in here, knowing that after a year or two, they can be disposable. They can be, you know, put on Robidoux Island. They might, you know, not be a big, big part. And you want to be able to draw top free agents to your team and be major contributors. But if I'm debating, if I'm going to sign somewhere for 6-7 years and I know I'm going to get my money, I know I'm not going to get bought out, or I can come to Vegas and be like, oh, after a year or two, they might be looking to get rid of me, I'm not going to sign there. So that's the way it used to be. I'm not sure how it is now or which way it's trending, but that's somewhere they have to be careful because you're going to be probably talking about this in a couple of years. Well, why aren't they signing any big name free agents? Because, not saying that players want retirement packages, issues, but they want a little bit of security, not just off the ice, but on the ice and in the dressing room as well, too. And remember, Leonard was supposed to be the number one. He signed a 5-year deal thinking that he was going to be the number one guy. So this flip-flopping, this taking the red pill and the blue pill and then taking it again, I think that's you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? So again, it's a tough, but again, something you worry about down the line, not in the middle of a playoff series, but it will have an effect
later
on.
They won't be able to sign anybody because they won't have any cap space left. Like, you're talking about a team that's just like, this is Vegas, man. Spend, spend, spend.
Las Vegas, they got no tax. I'm going there. Hey, I don't care what they do to veterans. Give me my money. I'm going to Vegas.
I'm telling you, no. I honestly, when I had my, I signed it, when I finished off in Atlanta, I had two deals, and one was for more money to go somewhere else, but I was like, no, they're known to buy contracts out after the first year. I'm like, I'm not going there. And it was for more money.
Yeah, Berkey's talked about that too.
Yes, absolutely. A couple of things there. What did you make of Robin Leonard's post game, where he talked about getting to the rink 4 hours early and doom scrolling for 2 hours?
Was he joking?
No.
So if he's not joking, that's not good. This is a guy who,
no, but he's
who talks
fine.
About
but,
mental health.
No, hang on. But he's fine. Like, it sounds like he can very much handle this. Like, this is just him. Sounds like this is part of his motivation. Like, listen, I believe that there's no one formula for every player has to follow to get motivated for a game. For a guy like Robin Leonard, going through mentions on Twitter, reading people slamming him, works for him. It wouldn't necessarily be healthy for most people, but it seems to work for him. So
I guess whatever gets that performance out of you last night. No, you're right. I can't criticize, but it doesn't seem like a long-term healthy plan. But sure, if that's what it takes to play like last night, who am I to tell him it's not the way to go?
And coming from a guy that engages with the trolls, like guys like Jim Bob and Petey Pablo telling me I'm brutal, and I know they're listening now because they're tweeting now. There's no
Jim Bob
there's no
and
winning.
Petey
yeah,
Pablo.
Jim Bob. Yeah, nice names, boys.
Come on and raise up.
But there's no winning. There's no winning with social media. And the one thing you could say, you read all the bad headlines, it does affect your play. And it's very, very tough. So to be intaking any negative energy, I don't get it. But I guess whatever floats your boat. But remember, he tweeted last time before he played. He got shell-shocked. And we didn't hear from him on Twitter for a couple more weeks. So it's a tough road to travel. And I would not feed the trolls or engage with trolls. But I'm just happy that I didn't send any gifts or memes, so you didn't see anything about me. So
I'm a fragile butterfly. If someone says something mean before we come on the show, I'm terrible all day. I can't believe he can go out and perform
like that. People are fining you about being on mute, and you obviously
And then I did it again. I choked. I choked.
That's why he's on.
I'm done with the
mute
button. You can all listen to me blow my nose the rest of the show. It's over.
Geez, I wish we had more time to do this one, but Tampa and the Islanders, this series tied up at twos. This has been a wonderful series. Like, both of them, like, really, the hockey's been excellent. And it's been fun, and it's been emotion-filled, and it's been spectacular. And no matter what happens in the playoffs, and we've had some iconic moments. Listen, we just had one on Friday night with Corey Perry coming back to the bench after the game, face all bloodied, nose busted up. And he's high-fiving his teammates as they come off the ice. Like, that's an iconic moment. You're going to remember, I don't know about for the rest of your life, but you're going to remember that for a long time now when you look back on these playoffs. But I don't know that we'll look back on one image from this postseason with as much awe. And again, we'll see what happens the remainder of the way, as we will with the Ryan Pulock save with 2 seconds left on Saturday. First of all, great move by Ryan McDonagh. Like, that is Serge Savard. That is Serge Savard style. Comes in, reads it perfectly, spins. Varlamov bites. He's coming out like he's a goaltender playing, you know, ripped out of the pages of 1985. He's totally abandoned his net and his crease. He's thinking, this is the last shot. I just got to get angle. Forget about everything I know about crease play. I'm just going out to stop this thing. McDonagh makes a great move. And Ryan Pulock slides to make the stop. Yeah. Borny, you're the Islanders guy on the show. Your thoughts on that one? When did the swelling come? When did the swelling come down?
You know what's crazy too is it's not just Varlamov that he beats McDonough with that spin. There's a sliding defender that he's like, I think is the reason he makes the move in the first place. So he beats two guys with that. Unbelievable. I had family at the game who were just saying like no one in the building even really knew what happened. Like, did Varlamov get a piece of it? So it's like only in slow motion it reveals the unbelievable excellence. Like, if it, you know, were they to go into the final or win a cup, like that would be an all-time iconic moment. You know, I had a coach text me. I was tweeting about it, and I had a coach text me, hey, no one's mentioning that Pulak doesn't have to do that if he just doesn't turn it over from behind his own net 10 seconds earlier. But all the clips... all the clips are edited right after that part, so we'll just revel in the glory of the save.
Stewie, last comment to you.
I just want to say, like, to be that engaged until the buzzer is very, very, you know, that's amazing for me as a player. And usually, you know, when there's 5 seconds left, I'm like, there's no way they're going to score. And I let my guard down, especially on defense. So to be engaged and be following the puck and saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to now recover and try to stop this puck, definitely an amazing play. And I think it could be a turning point for the Islanders now and on their cup run.
Certainly a rallying point. And you know what another great visual is? Watching the Islanders players and their fans at the Coliseum watch the replay together on the Jumbotron was fantastic. Yeah. That was a team meets fan moment, and the reaction of both was spectacular. So here we go. Game 5. Tonight, it is the New York Islanders facing off against the Tampa Bay Lightning. This game gets underway at 8 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet and CBC. Your pregame show, Hockey Central with Ron McLean, gets underway at 7:30 Eastern. We'll step away briefly. When we come back, Bridget Laquette, helping us celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day, will talk to us about being a rough-and-tumble defender. And also, we'll ask her what this day means to her. And we'll get a comment. We'll replay something from the morning show with Reggie Leach. Don't go anywhere. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. This is Hockey Central here Monday to Friday starting at noon. We are standing by, and Bridget Laquette is standing by for us as we're very much looking forward to this conversation about Bridget, the hockey player, and also we'll talk about Indigenous Peoples Day, which we are all celebrating today. And that includes part of this conversation from the morning show, Ziggy and Scotty Mack, in conversation with, man, was he an outstanding hockey player. One of our favorite Philadelphia Flyers ever, one of the best goal scorers the game has ever seen, Reggie Leach, on what this day means to him. Here's Reggie.
I think it's very important. You know, it's something that we are all proud of who we are and our culture and everything else, and having a special day makes it, you know, even more special because of, you know, there's so many things that are going on across the country for Indigenous Day. And, you know, it just doesn't end there, you know, with the sports, with all the guys that played in the National Hockey League or in semi-pro and being First Nation. And, you know, it's a special day for all of us. I mean, I'm very proud that we are having that, and we all celebrate it. So it's very important to all our First Nation people across the country.
The Riverton Rifle, the great Reggie Leach on the morning show this morning. Brigitte Laquette joins us now from the Canadian National Women's Program. Thank you so much for joining us. And I'll open up by asking you the same question they asked Reggie on the morning show. Before we get into your career and your skills and your profile and everything, what does this day mean to you?
Yeah, I guess first off, I just want to say thank you guys for having me. What does this day mean to me? I'm very proud of who I am and where I come from. And, you know, I come from, you know, Mallard, Manitoba, and I'm sure you're from Cody First Nation. So, I'm just extremely proud of my people and, you know, who we are and the things that we've overcome. And the one thing that I've learned throughout my life is that we're very, you know, strong and resilient people. And, I'm just very proud of who I am.
And you're an outstanding hockey player as well. And if anybody watched the PWHPA Secret Dream Gap Tour showcase in Calgary, I think we all know how hard a hitter you are as well. I can remember talking to some of the athletes before the tournament And we're sort of commenting on, okay, like who's the toughest on this team, who's the toughest on that team, and overwhelmingly, every single person said the person to watch out for is you. Have you always had that in your game?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, I mean, even growing up throughout my, you know, minor hockey career, my dad had always, you know, I remember my dad specifically telling me not to be scared of anyone on the ice. And, yeah, I laugh at this, but he always said to don't be scared of anyone on the ice. The only person you should be scared of is me. So, I mean, I always grew up, you know, being really gritty and, you know, obviously just, you know, trying to play the sport in the best way I can. And and I guess that comes on the physical side as well. So
thanks for joining us today. Just reading your bio, I mentioned in Manitoba that your father built a backyard rink. How was the quality of the ice? Not that it mattered, but how was that? And just, you know, playing on the pond, how did that help you develop your hockey skills?
Oh man. I guess, well, you know, there was just something about hockey that I loved. I grew up with eczema. So I kind of lacked that confidence. And, you know, I think that's kind of where I found sports as kind of my out in that way. You know, it didn't matter how many friends I had. I was just like, I love being out there on the ice. And I had to beg my dad to buy my first pair of skates. And he finally gave in. He put me into hockey. And, you know, he used that kind of a tool as to kind of keep me out of all the bad things growing up. Because, you know, growing up in a small community of like 100 people, there's not much that you can get into other than, you know, getting into yourself into trouble. So, he did a really good job of, you know, keeping us out of that. And, I guess, you know, playing hockey and being out there on the pond, you know, I could spend hours out there skating and shooting and, you know, even just by myself and doing that. And I think that's where, you know, I kind of developed all the skill. And obviously my dad was always, you know, watching NHL games, picking up on things that, you know, that, sorry, my dog, just, you know, picking up on certain things that defensemen, you know, do or forwards do. And then he'd be like, okay, they're going to go try that on the rink now. And then we'd go out there, place up my skates, and I'd go out there and do on works, certain skills. So, I guess it is. But, you know, the quality of the ice wasn't the greatest, but my dad did the best that he could with what he had. And he actually made a little Zamboni out of a water pump and everything like that. So,
awesome.
He was out there, you know, late at night flooding the ice, and then he'd flood in the morning, so it'd be nice and smooth for us and during the day. So
that's awesome.
Brigitte, I recently talked with Anne-Renée Desbiens, and she talked about the difficulty since the start of COVID times here in playing hockey games. I think she said she had played 3 games in the last 15 or 16 months heading towards, you know, Canadian national team times and all that. How has the experience been for you? Have you been able to play a lot more hockey than that, I guess? I guess, where do you feel like your game is at after all this time?
Oh, no way. I mean, well, she's based out of Montreal, so she had the luxury of skating throughout the year. But, you know, in Calgary, we didn't have that. We had about, I think we just had about 4 players in our hub. So we had about 4 skaters and a couple goalies skating like 3 times a week. And it was pretty hard, honestly, like to come into the showcase and expect to play at our best like that. It was pretty tough to do, honestly. And then we had the national team camps and everything throughout the year. And so, I don't know. I think it kind of hurt me a bit, not going to lie.
With Brigitte Lacouette here on Hockey Central, celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day. You know, I've heard you tell this story before, but for our listeners that may not be familiar, one of the things you had to deal with growing up, as much as it must have been fun playing on the rink, the dad was out there flooding at midnight under moonlight for the love of his daughter and her hockey career. I mean, the dark side of racist taunts and chants, not just from opposing players, but I'm sure coaches and parents and fans, etc. That's always been part of your story. What was that like when you first encountered it?
Yeah, I guess the first time I encountered it was, you know, fairly young. I played in a summer hockey tournament out in Winnipeg, and, you know, where I grew up was, you know, my entire like community was surrounded by a lot of Indigenous communities because I lived 4 hours north of Winnipeg. So, you know, even playing hockey, I had a lot more Indigenous kids on my team than, you know, if I were to play in the city. So, I ended up playing in a summer hockey tournament. The game got pretty rough. We were skating up the ice. I got a shoving match to the girl in the corner, and we were skating up the ice, and she said, "Get off me, you dirty Indian." And, yeah, like, replaying that so many times, like, I always kind of felt like I was, like, almost, like, a little ashamed, or, like, I knew I was angry, and, you know, I've never been called that name before. And I was so sad. I cried because I'm a crier, and, you know, I didn't really know how to react, but my family was also, you know, there, and they were able to kind of turn that negative into a positive. And, you know, Dad told me to beat them on the ice and, you know, meaning, you know, be the bigger person, be the better person, and be so focused on yourself and your own success. And that's what I did. I'm a very, very competitive person. So I hated losing. And that also, you know, fueled me to want to try my best and try harder every time I got called a different name or got told to go back to my reserve and things like that. And I just kind of use that as fuel to be a better hockey player.
I'm always curious as well. At what point did you realize, because you very much are, at what point did you realize you were not just a hockey player, but also a role model?
Well, I think it was like, it must have been probably the Olympics. I think when I made the team, like I had made the national team before that for a few years before that, but it wasn't really until I made the Olympic team where it was like, I went to the Olympics and then my sister made a fan page for me because people were like, messaging me directly, and I was just like, this is too much. And then she like kind of managed it for me, and it just kind of blew up from there. And I got all these requests to go to all these different, you know, Indigenous communities across Canada, First Nations, and everyone was asking me to go and share my story after the Olympics and wondering if they could book me and all this stuff. And then I kind of just went, I had 5 days off after the Olympics, and then I was just constantly on the go, going to a different community every single day. And it was so much fun. It was, you know, honestly so inspiring to see, because, you know, there's a small reserve out in right on the Michigan border there, Walpole Island, and they had shirts. They had made the Quet 4 shirts, and they were like sending me pictures and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, like, that is amazing. And you know, I was so touched by that. And you know, to have not only support, because I knew my community was going to support me, my family was going to support me, my friends were going to support me, but it was just to have every Indigenous community across Canada support me, it was just, you know, it still gives me the chills.
The saying goes, if you can see it, you can be it. What players did you look up to help inspire you to be a hockey player?
Yeah, I guess the reason I got into hockey again was I had a couple of older boy cousins that were into hockey, and then I love sports, so that's why I kind of begged my dad. But it wasn't probably until, you know, Jordan Tutu made the World Junior team and watched him in the World Juniors there. That's kind of when I was like, okay, like, this is pretty cool. You know, he's playing in Brandon, which is, you know, 3 hours from where I lived, and his brother was playing in OCN, and we were like huge OCN Blizzard fans, and we'd always go to all their junior A games and stuff like that growing up. And I think that's kind of when it was like, yeah, this is super cool, and you know, I want to do that someday, I guess. And you know, I didn't necessarily have that person to look up to on the national women's team that kind of was like me, and so yeah, I had to look to, you know, the professional, you know, NHL guys.
You know, I get it now. Hang on one second. I totally understand it. I'm like, okay, so where does she get this physicality? Because you, like, hammer people. And so Tutu at that World Juniors in Halifax was a wrecking ball. I remember that specifically. So, okay, so now, okay, the picture is coming into focus now. Now I get it. Justin, go ahead.
I read a quote from your college coach that said you're the most naturally gifted player to ever come through the program at the University of Minnesota Duluth, which is huge praise. So who within the women's game would you give that same compliment to, just a delight to watch and pure talent that's playing today?
Oh, man. You know, obviously, well, I say the obvious. Poulin is probably the, you know, is not probably. She is the best player in the world. And you know, it's been awesome to be able to play beside her for the last, I don't know, I've played with her since U18. So, you know, to see her, you know, develop and grow into the player she is today is just, you know, it's amazing. You know, it's just world-class talent.
You know, one of the players, speaking of that, one of the players that really opened my eyes, I knew she was good, but I didn't know she was that good at the Calgary Showcase, was Rebecca Johnston. I thought she was flat out phenomenal.
Yeah, she is. She's definitely one of the most talented players on that team, and you know, just a great, great hockey player.
I want to close on this. You're an inspiration for young athletes across the country. You're a very accomplished athlete yourself. You are a role model. And if we take out the word role, we are left with model. Tell us about the cover of Elle magazine with Sarah Nurse and Hannah Button. I know you guys had a lot of fun with that at the Calgary Showcase.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, to be honest with you, I must live under a rock because I didn't realize how big Elle magazine was. and I got asked to do it, and I was like, okay, like maybe. And then I was like, okay, I'll do it. And ended up going, and you know, it was like a 24-hour trip. I left my house. I like took the red eye over there, and I was back at home by 10 o'clock that same day. And you know, it was awesome. It was such a great experience to work with, you know, such professional people. And you know, even the photographer like made me feel so, you know, it didn't make me feel awkward at all. Like I just felt myself as he was taking the pictures. So, and they turned out great. So, you know, it was such a great experience and it was just a fun day.
It was outstanding and it came off great. And I love that you guys had fun with it on the ice as well. At the Calgary Showcase. That was great. This has been a pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping by today to celebrate a very important day, Indigenous Peoples Day. We really appreciate you, you stopping by. Best of luck in the future, and we'll definitely keep in touch.
Thank you so much. Bye.
There she is, Brigitte Lacouette, who is a like highly skilled physical right shot defenseman, PWHPA member, and an inspiration in her community. Like you hear the young girls talk about how much she means to her. And a lot of the videos about her life, like when she at her various hockey clinics, to hear the girls talk about her is special and spectacular because she very much is special and spectacular. And we thank her for her time today. On the NHL page again, we sort of gave short shrift to that Islanders series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. We are all tied up at twos now. I still think that Tampa's the better team here, but Justin, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Because every time, like, does it feel like every time we get too comfortable saying, okay, this is the moment Tampa takes this series over and the defending Stanley Cup champions say, okay, it's time to big dog these guys, the Islanders push back, and it's big plays from both big players and players down the lineup as well. I don't know what's going to happen in most hockey games. I really don't know what's going to happen tonight. Do you have a feel for this series in any way?
You know, I think I have some sense for it where there's like a real emotional wave behind the Islanders. You know, the fan base is, you know, excited and happy about this sort of last Coliseum run. It all feels like house money a little bit. They've got this reputation for structure and other teams having to beat them, so it doesn't feel like they have to force it. Like, they're just in a really good spot from the sort of mental side of things, I feel like. Like, Tampa Bay feels like the best team in the NHL, the most talent, the most likely to win the Stanley Cup, and it's just like the Islanders daring them to go beat them, and they just can't go beat them. So I don't know. I don't have an answer for what's to come next. I just know that it's really tough to beat this Islanders team on any given night, let alone four times in seven games.
Stewie.
Yes, I'll try to keep this in context here. In 10,000 years from now, you know, when we unearth a copy of Hockey 101 and what hockey was and how hockey should be played, I think they'll pull up a video of, you know, the New York Islanders. And it's not just about the talent. It's just about the buy-in to the system. And I always get giddy talking about it because that's how I try to coach my minor hockey team, saying it doesn't matter if you're a 50-goal guy or you can go skate the puck end-to-end. When you play those basic fundamentals, and you will be able to be successful at any level. And I go back to players like Cal Clutterbuck, who in the OHL didn't put up a lot of points. And, you know, I remember, you know, saying your career is done, and he went up having a better career than me. Players like Martin and Uncle Leo that were cast off from this Toronto market. So these guys now are going and finding success because they have that buy-in factor. Barry Trotz has this team buying in. And, you know, we're talking about Coach of the Year. He should be in that conversation every single year because this team, that buy-in on just how they're playing the system to a T, they're having an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. And I don't think they're really going to get their due unless they go all the way. But I love watching that hockey. I love coaching that way of hockey. And it's definitely, it's entertaining for me, who I consider I'm a hockey purist.
Mm-hmm. Remember Clutterbuck was the some of the muscle around John Tavares when he played with the Oshawa Generals as he came in as an exceptional player, one of only a handful to ever be granted exceptional status into the OHL. So there you go. So tonight, I love these, man, these nights where that you got your game. Boom, there it is. 8 o'clock Eastern. It is Sportsnet and CBC, the Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning. This series is tied at twos. And I mentioned Uncle Leo a second ago there. That was a tough one for Uncle Leo. 7:30 is the pregame show. Your host, Ron McLean. Puck drops just after 8 at Emily Arena. And yes, Borny, we are guaranteed at least one more game at the Coliseum. Well, hang on. Before we go to break here, from your point of view, because you're more intimately tied into the Coliseum between, you know, your father and your father-in-law and playing in the Islanders organization, what is it about that place? It might just be the four Stanley Cups. What does it for you about the Coliseum?
It's just very representative of New Yorkers' identities, I feel like. You know, it's just it's small, but it's cramped, and it's not nice, and it's noisy. It's like New York City in itself, but in a way that New Yorkers love. Like, you just sort of embrace the shortcomings, and you love the energy and the people and the passion that comes with it all. I don't know. It just reflects, I think, that sort of the energy of New York so well. It's not all hoity-toity. It's the rock. I love it.
Did you like playing there, Stewie?
It was dark. It was dark and bright at the same time. It was dark.
Truth.
It was dark. The lights were dark, but you're walking through the hallways and you're like, "This orange and this blue. I don't even know what kind of blue this is." Yeah, it was hard on the senses.
Hard on the senses. On that, we'll hit a break. More Hockey Central in moments. Smith and Jones, top of the hour. More Hockey Central here in a couple of moments. Don't forget tonight, Tampa and the New York Islanders, Game 5, and we'll have a Game 5 between the Habs and the Vegas Golden Knights. That series tied at 2 as that game goes on Tuesday. Hockey every day. It's a beautiful thing. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You know, real quick before we wrap up here, guys, have about 60 seconds here. I find the Selke Trophy to be one of the more interesting trophies that the NHL awards. And once you're in the club, it seems you're in the club for a long time. Welcome to the club, Alexander Barkov. Borny, is this overdue or is the time just right for Alex Barkov?
Well, it's just right. You know, he's been a great defensive player for a while, and good to see someone get some recognition from the Florida Panthers, right? It's tough to get eyeballs. If he plays for a team in Canada, maybe he already has one. You know, I personally like Bergeron and Stone a little bit more, but he's in that group of the elite defensive forwards in the league, so full credit to him.
Do we? Hot take. Hot Tuesday's tomorrow, but I'll go Hot Take Tuesday guy. If he was in a market, he'd be a Hart Trophy winner.
He'll be on some ballots. That's a great... No, hang on. Stewie's right. He's going to be on some ballots. You watch. When all this gets revealed, Barkov will be there.